Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs. You're coming up on today's show. Evan Damrell and I are going to talk about what we're looking for in these next two Cavs games. They have to play back-to-back this weekend on the road in Washington and then in Miami. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the cue.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
And we're back here on Locked On Cavs for Friday, February 21st. Evan, what's going on, buddy? How are you doing on this Friday? Today was maybe the first slow Cavs day we've had since last Sunday, probably the day I was least concerned about not looking at Twitter all day. How are you doing?
Not too bad. As you know, a little behind the scenes stuff. Technology being unforgiving, so it sounds like I'm calling in from a phone from the 1960s. That is your answer. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. You sound great to me. Justin sucks, and he can produce daily podcasts, and then he can come talk shit. There we go. Love you, Justin. Love Carter Moore. So on today's show, what we're gonna do is talk about these upcoming Cavs games. So Friday, obviously in DC. Saturday in Miami. This is a tough back to back. Obviously a new head coach. Some maybe different roster stuff, although we'll get to that in the third segment on today's show, and it doesn't seem like we're going to get any like wild changes, which I when you explain the logic of it, which again we'll get to, it made sense to me. But Evan, let's just start with Friday's game in DC. This is a Wizards team that over the last couple weeks is seventh in the league in point differential, according to Cleaning the Glass, at 0.3.9 points per 100 possessions. Over that same time span, the Cavs are the worst team in the league at negative 9.4 points per 100. The only team, the closest team to the Cavs is the Pistons, who are 0.7 possessions. Still very bad, but not as bad. Offensive-wise, the Wizards in that span are 25th in the league, 3rd in defense, 25th in offense, and 27th in defense. So the Wizards overall, have a more quality team, a little more proven this year. What are you looking for on Friday?
I'm kind of interested to see how Cleveland responds after their first game with J.B. Bickerstaff as head coach. Maybe the Cavs have practiced now Wednesday, today. I imagine they'll have their wheels up to Washington and have shoot around tomorrow before the game. So a little bit extra time with Andre Drummond kind of at the helm at the starting center position. I'm interested to see how that battle's going to go for Drummond. And I believe Thomas Bryant is the one who's starting for the Wizards right now. I'm pulling up their depth chart as we speak. But that'll be a fun matchup. I have a gut feeling and a gut fear that Bradley Beal's going to cook Cleveland. I think we talked about this the last time the Cavs played the Wizards, and pretty much what we expected ended up happening. But I'm just kind of interested more so to see like what Jimmy Bickerstaff does. And like you said, we're going to touch upon it in the third segment, but he did some interesting stuff at practice today that's going to kind of make the Cavs a little funky and a little weird these last 28 games or so. That'll at least keep me interested and engaged for a little bit, and we'll see how these things go. But I'm not really expecting a lot. I think this game is winnable for Cleveland, if anything. Washington, granted, is better than them record-wise, and they're, like you said, statistically just a lot more solid than Cleveland, but I still feel like this one is a little bit maybe within reach just because maybe there's just going to be like a jolt of energy for this Cavs squad with J.B. Bickerstaff kind of at the helm, and I don't know, maybe the Cavs just coming out of the All-Star break have plenty of time off just to kind of figure things out. What about you, Bud? What are you feeling for this game?
I think it's the energy level more than anything else. I think, again, that if sometimes you see like this bump with a new coach coming in that kind of gives a group kind of just more to play for, that you'll have guys just try a little harder, whatever it is. I'll be curious to see if the Cavs do benefit from that. It's a little bit of a different circumstance where, like, it wasn't like they fired a coach and then are playing pretty quickly and then are like trying to make it prove a point or something. Like, this is a group that just came back together yesterday. This sort of got out there and was like simmering on Sunday, and they weren't exactly all together. You know, it's not like this is a group that really was kind of, you know, kind of sitting, kind of structuring things in together and dealing with this like in real time. It's guys were a little more spread out than they might have been. You know, that's not inherently like a bad thing. It's just, it means it's a little different than sort of that normal bump. You know, it's all for me. One of the things I really think about is, you know, I think the rest of the year, one of the things I've been thinking about what I would want to see from the Cavs over these last 28 games or whatever it is, I really feel like they need more from Kevin Love. And if you're, I think Kevin, you know, I realized today there were more people that were annoyed with his comments and just and I think the frustration how he's handled this season, I think, is very fair. And I get that there was more frustration about what he said on Wednesday, which we talked about. And I don't think either of us really thought it was anything bad. Certainly, I think he's played a bigger part in this and kind of the dysfunction this year than maybe I've acknowledged. I think that's a fair thing. But when I think about what the Cavs want to get from him, now and into the summer, and then what he wants for himself, I really feel like these last 28 games have to be something where Kevin is close to the best version of himself. You know, think they need more from him, and I think it would start here. I think it would start in this game, and you know, maybe he's not playing back to backs the rest of the way. You know, like, I don't know if we'll play Saturday. I don't know if, you know, there's certain obviously games where like he's going to have some weird issues, but I think if you're Kevin, you have the coach that you were not getting along with is gone. A guy that you respect more is gone. Andre Drummond is here. This is like you have a chance to kind of like refix some of the narrative around you right now, post this All-Star break. Like, I want to see more from Kevin, and I think that's our Friday.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think now Kevin really has to, like, I can understand maybe why it irks some people based on what he said. Maybe he didn't bear enough culpability, and John Beilein kind of walking away from the situation, just like you did say, and I agree, and maybe we didn't touch on enough, or maybe we weren't on hard enough on Kevin, but I think it's just kind of obvious to say, like, this hasn't been a good year for him, both on and, well, statistically it's been all right, so on the court I guess it's okay, but like there's some bad stretches and just bad body language on the court, and then like all the blowouts and everything that's just kind of blown over off the court. And like, he did kind of own up to it yesterday after practice when he said he was being a shithead this season. And I think he's just kind of realizing that maybe he needs to pull back a little bit and realize, like, realistically, or there's a good chance that he has 28 games left in Cleveland. And he's kind of got to make sure he plays the good company guy and says all the right things and maybe kisses a few babies on his way out the door just to make sure that it can make his exit as smooth as possible for him, because Kevin's got to look out for Kevin at this point, because I think Cleveland's going to do whatever they can to move him this summer. But if he makes it easier on them going forward, it will definitely make that a lot easier, obviously. And like you said, and I think, yeah, no, playing the Wizards and playing, like, maybe he does and playing the back-to-back against Miami the following night, but no, this game against Washington is a good launching point, and maybe if he comes out and responds and just plays engaged and locked in, it just kind of shows that maybe this was a little bit of a Beilein thing, and maybe if they had Bickerstaff at the helm the whole time, we would have gotten the locked in Kevin Love more often. And there's a lot of what-if scenarios and a lot of branching paths and a butterfly effect kind of thing that you could have going on here. So we could sit here and spit hypotheticals all day, but no, I agree. If Kevin Love shows up locked in tomorrow and he continues to do so for the remainder of the season, it's just gonna make his exit a lot easier, and it's gonna make the remainder of his time a lot easier, and it's gonna make it a lot easier for you and me covering this team, so we aren't griefing and complaining and comparing the Cavs to Pompeii.
Yeah, I think yeah, no more like volcanoed out cities on this podcast would be a good change of tone for everyone involved, I think, us and the listeners. The other thing I think about this game is I think the Beal thing is right, because I think Bradley Beal, like, should have probably been an All-Star this year. It's a very, very good player. DC, if you're looking at the Wizards roster, he's the one guy that really strikes fear into you. You know, John Wall obviously isn't playing this year because of the Achilles injury. The injury report according as of Wednesday, that Ted Thomas Bryant listed as questionable. He's a good player, but just with a foot issue. So their last game out, according to Basketball Reference, they ran out of starting five of Ish Smith, Roy Hachimura, Isaac Bonga, Bradley Beal, and Jan Mahimi. You know, Bertans is good coming off the bench, and like they, you know, they're going to be incorporating Jerome Robinson, who they got from the Clippers, and you know, Mo Wagner comes off their bench and stuff like that. And Gary Payton the second is on their team. Maybe he'll get some bench run. But it's Beal. This is the Bradley Beal show. Shot, so in their last game, he shot 23 times. No other player took more than 9 shots. And this is going to be the Bradley Beal show. And if you want to look at how the Cavs are going to have to combat that, it's going to, Colin Sexton's going to get the first crack at that, I would imagine. No? I mean, it's, you would think that, this is the chance for to see how Colin does and to kind of see, you know, what that looks like. Are you expecting anything else kind of you're looking at here?
No, I agree. Like he said, Bradley Beal's probably going to take the most shots to the Wizards. It's going to kind of be one of those situations where either the Cavs try to let Bradley Beal beat them by himself, and that's a risky game to play based on how Cleveland plays, and they hope the rest of the supporting cast doesn't show up, or Colin Sexton's going to have his hands full, but I feel like it's going to be defense by committee. Alphonso McKinney will probably get some burn tomorrow night. Yeah. Ooh, Kevin Porter against him, so it's going to be a tough pull for the Cavs. I think the Miami matchup the following night, especially coming off the back-to-back in the Miami, well, maybe not the Miami nightlight, depending on when they fly in, but that's a rough game to have on a back-to-back, and I think Cleveland can't really say that they're focused on a certain team, and they have to just take this on a game-to-game basis. So I guess what I'm looking at really is you listed that starting lineup, I'm just like, that's kind of sad. And then you like look at the Cleveland side of things. Like they've had consistently the same starting lineup, and J.B. Bickerstaff has been planning on shaking anything up too seriously to wrap up the year based on what we've heard from him. So I'm just kind of interested to see more so, like you said, like just the energy level the Cavs are to come out with, and if they come out sharp and focused and hopefully help silence a lot of critics for J.B. Bickerstaff, because he's still getting a lot of heat from people online just based on his history with Houston and Memphis, which might be a little unfair, but I don't know. I'm just kind of interested to see what we get from this Cavs team. It's going to be a little weird. It's kind of still hard to think that Andre Drummond is on this team, so maybe Drummond will be a bigger X factor in this game along with Kevin, and maybe that kind of negates Bradley Beal's effectiveness to an extent, but I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag because the Cavs can dare Bradley Beal to try and beat them. And if the Cavs don't show up with the right energy, Bradley Beal can easily beat them.
Yeah, to wrap up this kind of first segment here, looking at the other two games the Cavs and Wizards played. So the first one was on November 8th. Way back then, the Cavs won the game 113-110. They were 3-5 at the time. Leading the way was Tristan Thompson at 21-12. Kevin Love at 16-12. Kevin Porter at 13 off the bench. Jordan Clarkson at 10 off the bench, and Colin Sexton at 16 as well. Beal in that one had 20 points and 8 of 21 shooting, made 3 of his 9 three-pointers, and Bertans only had 5 points in that one, was 1 of 8 from 3. And then in game 2, January 23rd, which is the game that I feel like I actually remember happened. I don't really remember the other one. Beal, as we both were thinking about in that game, shoots 15 of 22 from the field, 36.4 of 8 from 3. Did that with only 2 free throw attempts. So really just a lot of really, really insane work on his end. The Cavs lose 124-112. And the Cavs leading scorer in that one was Colin Sexton at 29. Kevin Love had 21. Darius Garland was 4 of 17 in that game. Larry Nance had a good game that went to 22-12 and 28 minutes off the bench. We will see exactly how this plays out. I would say the Wizards, I haven't looked at the betting odds, but in my mind, I would consider the Wizards the favorite in that one. And I think I think a lot of this game will depend on Beal. And I think a lot of this game will depend on what kind of Kevin Love we see. And also what kind of Andre Drummond we see. You know, we've seen two disparate experience plays from him so far, kind of different looking games. And we'll see what number 3 will look like here.
Yeah, no, I don't. It just kind of feels like a weird game, and I was trying to check the betting odds for you, and I don't see anything yet. But no, I wouldn't be surprised. Washington's like not an overwhelming favorite, but a pretty huge, not a huge favorite, but a big enough favorite over the Cavs going into this. But there's a lot of variables and factors and things that have kind of changed since then. But we'll kind of see what happens. I don't know. I'm looking forward to having the Cavs back. I'm just kind of interested to see how they respond to the last 72 plus hours, because it took 3 days for the Cavs to figure out what to do with John Boeheim. So I'm just kind of interested to see how they respond, and then kind of hope for the best and not really have any expectations for the remainder of this season.
By the way, Wizards are 4.5-point favorites in this game. So that's where the betting line's at. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then come back to talk about Saturday's game against the Miami Heat. Stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. Hey, we are back. Evan, Cavs, Heat on Saturday in Miami. This is a Heat team. No more Deion Waiters on that team, but they have Bam Adebayo. They have Andre Iguodala now. They have Jimmy Butler. They're playing tonight. We're recording this at about 8 o'clock. They're tied in the first quarter right now against the Atlanta Hawks, but they will have a day off between the Cavs and Heat game on Saturday. What are you looking for on Saturday? What is the highlight for you on Saturday's game?
Well, I don't really expect the Cavs to do very well in this matchup against the Heat. A back-to-back against a very talented Miami squad. As it stands right now, Tyler Herro is out, which is their kind of exciting rookie just in terms of shooting and what he brings to the table, and maybe some Heat fans consider him untouchable from what he brings to the table. And I'm trying to pull up this Hawks score to see who is and isn't inactive, because Miami might be resting people. But I'm kind of just waiting to see, like, again, how the Cavs are responding with their energy, and especially in a back-to-back situation. This will be another big test for J.B. Bickerstaff as head coach, and just kind of the coaches that are kind of moving up in the ranks and everything. And we're probably not going to see Kevin Love, so Larry Nance will have to be leaned upon a lot, and I'll probably want to see a lot of minutes from Drummond. I think the battle between him and Adebayo will be a lot of fun, too, because Bam was an all-star this season, and Drummond was an all-star in seasons past, and so that'll be a fun matchup. And I wonder if Miami ends up resting some players against Cleveland, mostly like Jimmy Butler and other key players in their lineup. Like, I think Bam is going to be fun to play because he's young and athletic, and you can run him into the ground. But Eric Spoelstra is a really underrated coach, in my opinion, and I don't think he gets enough credit for how well the Miami Heat are consistently coached, and that'll be an interesting tactical battle too between him and JB. So more power to him if he'd be able to pull off an upset win in Miami, which is his place. Historically, Cleveland has not played very well. I can't even remember the last time they won there.
Yeah. It feels like it's been forever. So Bam Adebayo is a like top 25 defender according to Defensive Real Plus Minus. In my like personal rankings, I think I would have him like top 15 in the league. The dude is really, really incredible. This to me is the Andre Drummond, let's see what the Cavs do with him game. I don't like have a good feel for what Bickerstaff is going to want to do there. You know, part of me wonders if like we could see something where like, you know, like there was the little stretch of the last LeBron Kyrie Love LeBron season where like you got a bunch of first quarter Kevin Love post-ups just to kind of get him some touches and kind of integrate him. I wonder if you might see that with Drummond under Bickerstaff. You know, when I was kind of looking at how they used Jaren Jackson Jr. last year, Jaren Jackson Jr. this year has like become like a really good or at least interesting three-point shooter. He's shooting like 6.5 times a game. You know, he has had this thing where like Bickerstaff's thing is going to be a little more old school. Drummond is going to probably, I would imagine, get some post ups. I think I think we saw from early on that they're going to try to allow him to do some creativity and be kind of do some of the stuff that he's probably not ever going to be great at, but he certainly wants to try and do. Bam's going to be a really just big test for kind of how Drummond can compete in the test of the kind of look of the system. And it's early, you know, it's only be game two of Bickerstaff. If Love doesn't play, you know, that certainly is going to cramp things a little bit and whatnot. But, you know, I want to see how he looks against a guy like Bam. And even if like Jimmy Butler and Iguodala and like other guys don't play and we see like Solomon Hill or like Jay Crowder or whomever, I think this game really to me will just be, how does Drummond do against a guy like Bam?
Yeah, I think it'll be Bam's going to be a good test for both, the combination of Larry Nance and Andre Drummond. If you want to just kind of look at things long term as well, like how do those two look together? Because you and I both agree that long term Larry Nance might be best suited off the bench for the Cavs, but if Kevin Love just does get moved in the offseason, there's a good chance that it could be Nance Drummond to start next year. And Bam is definitely a good defensive litmus test on both their part and what J.B. Bickerstaff kind of does to incorporate them. It's interesting you mentioned the three-pointers. Drummond does have the game of a traditional center, and I'm sure J.B. and the coaching staff are going to encourage him to get more traditional looks. But I'm sure most people who are listening have followed Spencer Davies on Twitter. I tweeted a video, too. But Drummond, Thompson, and Nance all work together shooting their threes at the end of, like, shooting threes at the end of practice. Like, I touched on this with you a little bit ago, but Tristan, when he was having that hot shooting night from three-point range not too long ago, he told Angel Gray he'd been practicing that shot. And I actually watched it in person. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, he's actually practicing that shot. So maybe, like, JD's going to kind of mix things up for these last two games. Maybe he encourages Drummond to kind of struggle from three-point range. And even though he doesn't have the prettiest release and maybe doesn't go in all the time, it's just kind of to mix things up. But, no, on the defensive side of the ball, I'm hoping the Cavs look semi-competent, especially if JD kind of has full reign of everything. And, yeah, no, I just think Bam's going to be really interesting to watch. And I think if you just, it just trickles down from there. Like, Miami has a lot of just tough-nosed defensive players. And like I touched on before, Eric Spoelstra is a really good coach. So I'm sure he's going to put all of his players in a position to succeed, especially against the Cleveland team, who isn't the best defensively.
I think the other thing about these next couple games that I'm really curious about, this is going to be one of the themes of our third segment, but to kind of just kind of lean into it a little bit, I would really like to know what the rotation ends up looking like. I don't get the sense from how he's talked about things and whatnot that we're going to see J.B. Bickerstaff making like really crazy changes. Like, I think you're going to see stuff we haven't seen a lot of this year. And I think some of the structural, like, overall things might look a little bit different. Like, I think you will see like Drummond and Kevin Love leaned on in ways that we haven't so far. I really think we're going to just see that. I think there's some logic to that, honestly. But I also like wonder, like, you know, when does Tristan come in? How much does he play? Who does Nance play with? Like, just do the substitution pattern change? Like, I don't think we're going to get a starting lineup change, at least not in the next like five or so games. Maybe we do after he's coached a few and he has a feel for this from a leadership position that he has now, because it is just a different seat, different viewpoint as a head coach. But I think these next two games, and especially, you know, if you get some different stuff on with guys sitting out on Saturday, if let's say like Tristan plays 20 something, let's just say Tristan and Kevin both don't play Saturday or whatever. Does that set a tone where like Drummond plays a ton and Nance plays a ton and maybe you're playing really small and stuff like that? Like there's a lot of this that just feels like it's going to be dependent on who's actually available on a night to night basis. And I think more than anything, these next two games for me are just overall about getting a feel for, or what sort of constructions we're going to be seeing through the end of the season, more so than like worrying so much about the quality or analyzing the quality of the next game. It's more about just a feel for what the structure is kind of going to look like, and then kind of going from there.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. Like, I kind of like, while you were talking, just typed out like a basic depth chart for the Cavs on a notepad, just to kind of have a perspective of it. So let's say Love and Thompson are out. I don't know if Ante Zizek is back yet. I don't know if we've actually been given an official update on him. I did see him shooting and working in practice yesterday, so maybe he will be available for the team, especially in Miami. So that'll definitely be interesting to check out. But I do wonder, like you said, you wanted to lean on Love and Drummond a lot, and we'll touch again on this in the next segment. But let's say Thompson is available for Saturday's game against Miami. Bickerstaff did touch on the fact that he wants to see what he has with Thompson and Drummond on the floor together. Like, rebounding-wise, that's awesome, but spacing-wise, that's absolutely terrible. And if you throw Kevin Porter in the mix, like, he's an all-right three-point shooter, but does need space to operate. Ditto for Colin Sexton. It's going to get really messy really fast if the Cavs start throwing some of their bigger bodies around. And I'm kind of just intrigued to see, yeah, like, what the rotate. But I think they're going to set with a Bickerstaff will stick with the rotations because he's kind of what he's been familiar with while being John Beilein's right-hand man, but maybe he starts to get a feel of this roster through this road trip, and, like, these are two pretty decent tests just to kind of figure out, like, what they do and don't have against legitimate competition to maybe round out his rotation or figure out, like, okay, well, I'm going to give Dante Exum more time on the wings, or maybe I'm going to put, like, you and I talked about, like, maybe Dante Exum actually gets more time to play instead of Alphonso McKinney, but then Alphonso McKinney kind of gets more of, like, set matchups and set situations where, like, X player, like, let's say Jimmy Butler's having, like, a crazy night, and, like, you need to give Kevin Porter a breather or Jetty Osmond a breather. That's when you plug Alphonso McKinney in if Jimmy Butler ends up playing. Or if we jump back to the Washington game, the same ditto for Bradley Beal. Like, you give Osmond and Porter a bit of relief, and then you put McKinney on him. And then, I mean, Exum's not the ideal matchup, but he has the size and length to guard someone as, like, a Bradley Beal in that situation. And depending on who Miami rolls out there, like, Tyler Herro is out tonight against the Hawks with a foot injury, and I'm not sure if he will play Saturday against Cleveland. I doubt he will, because it's not really worth risking a key rotation piece against a team like the Cavs. So that's another guy you can kind of throw McKinney at. I don't know. It's just going to be a lot of tinkering, I think, for maybe the next handful of games, maybe like 3, 4, possibly 5 games, just to kind of figure out, GB to kind of figure out what he does and doesn't have. And then I tweeted this earlier, and we'll obviously expand on this in a few minutes, but I'm kind of looking forward to the Cavs getting weird with things and maybe just kind of figuring stuff out. Like, it may not work, but at least you can say you tried it, and then you can just kind of squash any notions and preconceived notions that maybe people who watch this game or cover this game clearly have about this team.
Yeah, I think that's right. If you're going to pick one of these two games, which one would you say is you're more intrigued to watch?
Probably the Miami game. Even though I know the Cavs are likely going to lose this one, and maybe this ends up being like the Nuggets game where you and I kept talking it down so much, Cleveland surprises us. But I really like how this Miami team is constructed. I really like how they're coached. I don't like Kendrick Nunn as a person. That's the only thing I don't like on Miami. But like you said, Bam Adebayo is absolutely incredible. Like, his growth and progression is great. Jimmy Butler, like, you could, all jokes aside, like, I know Philly fans like to say he retired Miami this year, but no, he's kind of, I know, like, we say he culture is, like, a lot of just, like, buzzwords and a lot of BS, but I think Jimmy Butler is really the personification of he culture. He's kind of helped shape that team along with Spoelstra's guidance and Pat Riley as well under, like, his image and mentality, and, like, they're just a really solid team overall, and, like, I'm kind of intrigued to see how Cleveland looks against, like, a legitimate playoff team that isn't Milwaukee, because Milwaukee would absolutely gobsmack Cleveland.
What about you? I think it's Washington. I think it's just the quality of teams a little lower, and first game and all that stuff. I think that one to me is just kind of higher in my priority list. I we'll talk about it more, you know, over the weekend and perhaps and Monday and whatnot, but I think Friday's game to me is definitely the more kind of intriguing one, just because I sort of think we'll get the full roster and then we'll go from there. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, one last break here. You're going to, on the way back in, you're going to hear JB Bickerstaff talking about Kevin Porter Jr., the audio courtesy of 92.3's James Rapine. So thanks to James for the audio there. Just hearing Bickerstaff talk about Kevin Porter Jr. And then we are going to get into some of the stuff that was alluded to on Thursday to kind of see what could be coming. That's coming up next on Locked On Cavs.
You believe in him and think he's got, you know, a high, high ceiling. And we want to see him get there and be consistent at it. You know, if you look at over the past weeks, you know, where his shot has improved from the three-point line, like, that's a credit to his work, you know, putting the ball in his hands more and having him make more plays and focusing on, you know, the right decisions and making the simple play where we cut back on some of his turnovers. He sees the floor, you know, at a high level, and the play is sometimes the right play, but how we execute that play, right? So whether it's a bounce pass or a lob, or the pass at the level of the hands, like those types of things. You know, I think quickly, you know, he can grow in that area and, you know, his elite playmaking ability can go to another level. So we're going to give him a shot to do a ton. You know, we're going to put the ball in his hands. We're going to ask him to score. We're going to ask him to facilitate. And then, you know, the conversation we have with KP is, you know, he has the opportunity to be a two-way player. And so we just don't let him, you know, focus on offense and focus on scoring. You know, like you look at the teams that have success now, is they put guys, you know, on the floor who are capable of doing it on both ends of the floor. And I think that's somewhere where he can be and we need to get to.
Again, so there was JB Bickerstaff audio courtesy of James Rapine for 93. Okay, so Evan, here's some of the things that JB Bickerstaff had indicated. This is courtesy of Ben Axelrod of WKYC, friend of the pod. Here's some of the things that he said they'll experiment with in the next 28 games. And he said they also said, per Ben, that they aren't going to make any lineup rotation or changes yet. So those are not going to be on the table, I would say, this weekend, maybe even Monday. Well, again, something we talked about earlier. The three things that Ben mentions are Kevin Porter Jr. playing point guard, and the clip you heard and the full extension of that alluded to that, playing Drummond and Tristan together, and playing small ball lineups. If I was going to rank these on what I am most interested in seeing, it's KPJ at the point, even though I don't really love it. Small ball lineups, because I think how that would happen would be really interesting considering the roster construction, and then Drummond and Tristan together. What about you?
We have the same exact rankings. Kevin Porter, like, I get it. I think it was James Rapine again who tweeted about it, or maybe it was somebody else who was at practice today, said, like, JB Bickerstaff is really excited about Kevin Porter's potential, and maybe not necessarily plugging him in as a point guard, but it's cliche, but people say basketball is kind of positionless, and maybe you kind of, like, just see what he works in the playmaker, and, like, he's competent enough, like, he has maybe smart reads and smart passes throughout his rookie campaign, so maybe you just encourage that off the bench, and maybe that guarantees, like, Dellavedova minutes, and then, like, small ball seems like it's just a smart, logical thing to do. I guess you pull it off with, gosh, Kevin or Tristan at center, because Drummond is a traditional big man and a plotting big man, so I don't know if you can really do small ball with him. And then Drummond Thompson, like, maybe raise an eyebrow, and, like, I was joking about it, and then I was joking about it a lot, saying, like, let's get really weird with it, and, like, the Cavs could roll out a lineup of, like, Kevin Love at the point, Larry Nance the two, Dean Wade at the three, Tristan Thompson at the four, and Andre Drummond at the five. And then, like, if the Cavs want to get even, and then if Zizek is fully healthy, you just bump everyone down, you put Drummond at the four and Zizek at the five or whatever, and, like, you just want to play big boy bully ball, like, by all means. But, like, Drummond and Thompson just have a weird, it's just a weird fit if, like, you put one at the four and one at the five. Like, I touched on this, like, in the last segment, like, there's no spacing at all in that situation, and that's kind of the antithesis of modern basketball, at least from the four position, especially when you have a premier stretch four on your roster and Kevin Love. But I'm all for it. Like, clearly whatever Cleveland was doing up to this point hasn't been working, and if you just kind of want to tool around the things and figure out what you do and don't have, and JB touched on this yesterday after practice as his first day as head coach, he does have a little bit of, like, breathing room in the fact that he is the full-time head coach and he doesn't have the interim tag slapped on. So maybe it gives him a little bit more breathing room just to kind of tinker and figure out, like, maybe this works in the future. Like, let's say Kevin Love is here to start next season, or for some reason Tristan Thompson agrees to a contract extension if he's comfortable with coming off the bench behind Drummond. Like, you get those two comfortable with each other, and maybe he really sees something that, like, some of us have just noticed with Kevin Porter because he's been around him way more often as a playmaker. Like, maybe he can play a little bit more of, like, a point forward role. And yeah, it's just interesting to see, like, that. Like, it doesn't, like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting to see what's going to happen. If the Cavs are going to get weird with it, I'm all for it, because at least it'll make it somewhat more fun to watch than what I've been subjected to over the last 54 games.
I do not think of KPJ, like, him being a point guard just seems like there's a lot that could kind of go wrong there. as anyone listening to this podcast knows, and I've written about him, and I think he's been the Cavs' most encouraging rookie this year, between him and, you know, if you want to count the G League guys or whatever. But if you look at just what he's been, he's got a turnover percentage in the bottom 2% of the league among wings. You know, like his percentage is actually pretty good for his position, and his assist usage ratio is pretty good. So those are, you know, kind of encouraging things. He's not even 20 years old yet. So like, this is all sort of like, he's really young, et cetera. But that's not, I think, a position that really is going to kind of, I think, bring the best out of him. Now, do you want to see him making more plays? Yeah, but I think you could just, there's other ways you could kind of do that. And I do think if he is going to play the point or like initiate the offense in certain instances, I think you need to, it has to be done in a way where you're going to support him pretty clearly. So I think Kevin, at least one of Kevin and Drummond should be on the floor. I would like, maybe you have to like just try to play Delly just to like, I don't know, like that sounds crazy to me in a lot of ways, but like just having another vet on the floor to kind of help him navigate that. If you're going to do that, I think you might need to do that. Just to have a guy there that's going to help you kind of coach him on the floor as he goes, or just do something like that. Now, I can't speak to how much that will matter to KPJ specifically, but I know that's something coaches have done. I know it's something that some coaches, like, I know the Cavs have done in the past with guys. I think that you would have to structure it so like it's not, I think if you're going to do that, you need to structure it in a way that, I think just gives them a real support system. And then for small ball, I don't know how you get there, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't think there's a thing missing on this Cavs roster. Right, like Jetty shouldn't be playing the four. We learned that last year. That's just not his thing. KPJ is not there physically yet. So are you just going to play like four guards basically, or two wings and two guards and play really small with Thompson or Nance or Drummond rim running? Like, I don't know. Curious to see what Bickerstaff does. I think those are the kind of things that I think if you just look at this roster, just thinking about it, thinking about sort of where we're at with this team right now, you know, The guys that I would say I definitely want to see play at the end of the year are Sexton, Osman, Garland, Thompson, Love, Nance, KPJ, McKinney, Exum, and Drummond. And everyone else, I'm like, if it's Delly, if it's Zizic, if it's, you know, two-way guys, like I think the guys that I would want to see are sort of those kind of core eight, nine, ten guys.
Yeah, it's just a little weird. The more we dissect it, the weirder it sounds. Like, I just don't think the Cavs have the capability. I mean, you could put Nance at the five, but that's going to get Cleveland absolutely shredded defensively. And I know you did say, like, statistically, through advanced stats, Nance is Cleveland's best defender, but he is better suited, in my opinion, at the four. After the height test truth gate, that the true height came out from everyone in the NBA, like, he has the size to play like a three or a four in this league, but he has the skill set to play the four. So I don't think Cleveland's presently constructed to do that. And to your other point before, like, if you experiment with KPJ as like a point forward, yeah, you kind of have to tell Delly to get out there and just play point guard just to kind of act as like a stopgap in a cell, which somewhat similar to what Beilein was doing at times when he would pair Garland or Sexton with Dellavedova just to make sure like they had a reliable, albeit not like the best scorer, but I mean Delly can still move the rock at least, and he can still operate within an offensive system, which is nice, but there's not a whole lot else he brings to the table. So I guess maybe use him as a bit of just like a bridge to help out when if this experiment kind of blows up some nights. But yeah, no, I just, that small ball thing starting to, like, I don't know, mate. It's a close second and third on what J.B. Bickerstaff's trying to incorporate with the remainder of the season now, because I just don't think Cleveland currently has the current roster makeup to make small ball work, just considering who they devote the majority of their minutes to in the rotation are mostly big guys and Thompson, Love, Drummond, and Nance. And you can plug and play and kind of figure it out. And maybe, like you said, you run four guards and then you have, like, Nance or Thompson in there, but yeah, no, it's just weird, man. Like, the more I think about it, the more, I'm not saying annoyed, because I can't judge JB's judgment or decisions too soon, but it just feels weird, and I'm kind of interested to see what happens with it. But I think KPJ as a point forward does have potential, but it could either go okay if like we see that he is a competent playmaker and like that's just a wrinkle Cleveland adds to their offense going forward, or it's going to fail in spectacular fashion. I really hope it doesn't like stunt his development or kill his confidence anyway.
Is there something that he did not mention that you would want to see? For me, it's just I want to see Exum just get like a real run. I don't get why you wouldn't do it. We talked about this like a week or two ago. I don't see why if you're going to go like a bench unit, like I feel like he should, like I'm pro KPJ getting more creation opportunities. Why not just go like Exum, McKinney, Porter and just see how that looks? Like I would do that. That's personally what I would like to see. I want to see if you can salvage anything out of Exum. It's the injury he had after that really big scoring game against the Wolves, like really seems to, or maybe it happened in that game, I don't remember at this point, just kind of did him in, and I would want to see, but I want to see him get actual burn and kind of see where he's at. What about you?
No, I agree. I think it's silly for the Cavs not to, you know, I don't think JB outright said it at this point. I maybe have to go back and listen to it just because my memory is a little foggy from today, but let's be honest, just with everyone here and you and me, just between the two of us, like he's going to lean and probably tap in more so into these younger guys and just to see kind of like what he has, because he's going to be the head coach next season and Dante Exum should be considered part of those young guys. He lines up with Cleveland's timeline in terms of their rebuild, and I don't see why they don't give him more burn, just kind of see what they have. Like, can he be the third guard in the rotation between Sexton, Garland, and Exum? And then if not, like that just makes it easier for something else to address. And like maybe Dellavedova isn't a priority to bring back, and you can use that roster space that's left behind by Delly to maybe put in another young promising player that the Cavs can kick the tires on and figure out with. But no, yeah, like I think it's silly that Exum is kind of in hot and cold in terms of rotation minutes. Like maybe he did something to upset Beilein or something. I don't know. Everything's weird with Cleveland under John Beilein as head coach, and maybe JB Bickerstaff will return it to normalcy. But I think it'd be remiss of this coaching staff not to like at least take a look at what they have. And then here's another novel thing: if they're able to piece together his, like help patch together his confidence so he feels comfortable playing Cleveland's rotation, Dante Exum is an expiring asset next year. And if he looks comfortable in his role as like a reserve guard, he looks like a competent defender. He can move the ball and he can sometimes score. Like maybe that Wolves game is a bit of an anomaly just in terms of where he's at. Because Ben Dowsett did warn me that like he's not the best scorer, and like you're not going to get something like super glamorous on the offensive side of the ball. But if you're able to like piece together a solid enough framework and film, like Cleveland could easily help flip Dante into another asset if they don't think he's going to be a part of the plan long term. But you can't figure out if he's not going to be part of the plan long term if you don't play him.
Yeah, and he's making under $10 million. He's still really young. He's a really good athlete. You know, maybe there's not a ton left to be kind of mined there, but I don't think there's – I think there's like a non-zero chance that there's not nothing, and you shouldn't be incredibly picky with kind of exploring any of this right now. Those are kind of my big ones. I think we've hit on everything. Evan, as we get out of here, any final parting thoughts as we wrap up this Friday show?
I'm kind of excited that the Cavs back, as weird as it sounds. I know you and I, after we were active yesterday, said, like, Chris, we have to stop talking about John Beilein, like, in depth, because I've said so much. And, like, I went to bed that night thinking, like, I'm so burnt out and tired of this team. And, like, I woke up today and then working everything, and I kind of listened to what JB had to say and what Tristan had to say after practice, and, like, kind of got my juices flowing again. Like, I'm ready for the Cavs to be back, and just, you know, kind of hoping, like, there's going to be not a lot of winning, but I hope I have fun over these last 28 games. What about you, buddy?
I think that's it. I think I want to see interesting stuff. I want to see, you know, I want to just see kind of how things end up working. I want to see how things ultimately just kind of come together. And I just want to see if I think you would hope that everything that is if you're the Cavs and if you're internally in there, I would really want to see them in the next week, or sorry, not even next week, the last 28 games, excuse me, not have anything be lower than it's been the last week. This has been a season with some pretty peaks and valleys. This week, last week has certainly been, I think, the lowest point of their season. I think if you're them, you just want to see if you can get the rest of the year without going all the way down again. And again, I think Kobe Altman should speak publicly.
Yeah, no, I agree too.
Like, there's no like. I was pleasantly surprised, by the way. Just I was listening to 93 today, and they were like, he should speak. Like, it's like basically we're calling him out for not speaking. So I'm glad this isn't just like me being a weirdo. I would very much like him to speak as well.
Yeah, I think I think at least for the Bayland thing, we're only going to get the paragraph or however much he spoke to someone in Cavs PR for that statement. But I hope it's not like another sneaky last minute press conference. It's just something a little bit more normal. And I think maybe Kobe just needs to kind of work on his relationship with the media. That's just my two cents. But before we wrap this up, I did look at our stats today too. And I broke it down like on a state, like a statewide level in the United States. And we are listened to in 49 of the 50 states. And Wyoming right now, we currently have zero listeners. So if anyone in Wyoming happens to download this podcast and give it a chance, let me know what we can do to improve your experience.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like trying to, if you're a Wyoming fan and you want to follow Larry Nance Jr.'s NBA career, why are you not listening to Locked On Cavs? Like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
I don't
listen. Like, Larry Nance is a big Josh Allen guy too. Like, come on, put two and two together here, guys. Come on.
Yeah, listen to Locked On Cavs.
Listen to Locked On Cavs. Don't listen to the Chase Down. That's my PSA for the weekend. Everyone have a good one.
Yeah, and again, just thanks everyone who has listened. This has been a great month for us listener-wise. I'm really glad. I think, selfishly, I'm really glad I have Evan here with me doing this because it's made it more fun and just easier to do. And I'm glad we've had success doing it. So, Evan, thank you for joining me on this ride.
You sure you mean that? Because all I've done is riff on you for the Joker and the fact that you don't think it's a good movie and... I just, like, I sometimes sound super unprepared because I'm listening to what you say, then you ask me what's going on, and I just, like, go, and then I have, like, a five-second pause. So I'm trying to get better, but I've had a lot of fun doing this, and I always used to joke with people, like, saying, like, I'll never do a podcast, but, no, this has been a lot of fun, and I don't regret it at all, and I'm definitely looking forward to what the future holds, and we will be the advocates of normalcy, and once the Cavs reach normalcy, that'll be our big I told you so moment.
Yeah, well, just I'm gonna like I don't have like a good reference, but I'm gonna be happy at that point. I'm gonna like just ascend to Valhalla if the Cavs ascend to normalcy, and I don't have to be like, well, Kobe Altman doesn't it's Kobe Altman hasn't spoke to the media in 9 months or whatever. This is weird. Like, does he have a beard? I just have a lot of questions. Like, does he have a beard now? Like, what does he actually think? What's going on? I just would like to talk to him. It would be good. Okay, so that's
Where
gonna be it for
hide in the facility.
Yeah, it's a good question. Does he have like a little side office? Is he like, I don't know. I have questions. I always try to find him at games too. And like, he's probably using the back elevators, which is smart. You know, or he's not there. He could be out traveling and scouting and stuff, which I definitely think he has been doing a decent amount of. All right. That's going to be it for today's show for Friday, February 21st. Thanks for listening, guys. And we'll be back here very shortly.